Welcome to the Fiddle Leaf Effect, the podcast where we dig into all things digital marketing, what's working, what's not, and what's next. I'm Emma, founder and CEO of Fiddle Leaf Marketing.
And I'm Matt, director of marketing and co-host. We're a sibling duo bringing you real talk, expert insights, and the strategies that actually move the needle.
Whether you're a business owner, marketer, or just interested in digital marketing, we've got you covered.
So grab a coffee and let's get into it. Welcome to Fiddle Leaf Marketing's Women in Business panel. Today, we're celebrating our one-year anniversary alongside International Women's Day with our very first podcast episode. I'm here today with eight women who are kicking some butt in the world of business, and I am lucky enough to have personally worked with all of these women in some capacity, and I'm very excited to pick their brains today about their experience as female entrepreneurs. We've got a very long list of topics today, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on a lengthy intro, so let's jump into it. I want to start by introducing our panelists. And ladies, if you don't mind, just kind of give a wave to the camera for our video viewers when I intro you. So to start, we have Emma Huschka, founder and CEO of Fiddle Leaf Marketing. We also have Emily Arbor, owner of Cheerfully Made, and Sarah Biggs, COO of Cheerfully Made. We have Megan Monroe, owner of Caribou Gifts, and Michelle McGilvery, co-founder of Blondie Apparel. We have Hillary Ogro Plant, founder of Momentum Birth Coaching. We have Casey Teleria, founder of Rosebud Speech Therapy. And last and certainly not least, we have Kristen Wood, who is co-owner and director of operations of Mahogany Salon and Spa and Mahogany Medical Aesthetic Clinic. We will be linking all of our panelists' businesses, websites in the show notes. So please go check them out and show them some support if you appreciate the podcast today. Awesome. So just to kind of break the ice here, I want to start with Emma. And I want to talk a little bit about inspiration. So Emma, talk to us about what inspired you to start Fiddle Leaf Marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, thank you to all my panelists for being here. I love working with all of you and really excited to have you here. But what inspired me, I've been in digital marketing, paid advertising for about almost eight years, and I'm really passionate about helping businesses grow and using my skill set and experience to do that. But as a woman, I am always looking to support other women, and with this skill set, I was looking for a way to lean into that. So I had two daughters over the last 3.5 years and wanted something with more flexibility to be able to balance both being a mom, but also following my passion of helping businesses grow. So a year ago, I finally took the leap and started Fiddle Leaf Marketing, really with a lot of intention to focus on women-owned businesses. And again, use my skills and experience to help other women business owners grow and really highlight women-owned businesses, hence this podcast. So that's the inspiration. And again, really proud and excited to be doing that for 1 year.
Awesome. Hillary, you were talking a little bit before we started about being a teacher before starting Momentum Birth Coaching. So talk to me a little bit about that pivot, kind of what was going through your head and kind of your inspiration for Momentum Birth Coaching.
Yeah. So also thank you, Emma and Matt, for having me. This is amazing, and I'm excited to hear from everyone. So I was a third grade teacher for 7 years, and I was working in a really under-resourced community and school, and it was just very overwhelming and stressful. And I had my first son in 2022. And when he was born, I just started to realize the lack of support for expecting parents, and like, you can go to childbirth classes, but who do you ask questions to? And all of that, I didn't know. So after I had my first son, a friend who was also pregnant asked me to come over so that she could ask me a few questions about having a baby. And she's like, I don't know how to change a diaper. I don't know how to hold a baby. I don't know. Like, she had a million questions, and it just kind of clicked in my head that people need help. New moms and new parents need help. And so I started a birth coaching certification. I was still teaching and I just thought, oh, I'll do this like for my friends. And then I had a second baby and I woke up one day on maternity leave and said, I'm not going back to teaching, and scared my husband to death. But I just resigned from my job and like jumped straight in. So I think that was like last May. So it hasn't quite been a year yet, but that's where I am. And I'm helping now new parent or expecting parents with prenatal coaching.
I love the kind of the underlying theme there, like that sometimes your career kind of finds you, right? Like you had people coming to you. And so I love that. Casey, I want to kick it to you on this one as well. Of course, you are owner of Rosebud Speech Therapy. Sorry. Talk to us a little bit about what inspired you to get into child speech therapy.
Sure. Well, I've been a pediatric speech therapist now for a decade, which sounds insane. And I've worked in so many different settings. I've worked with like the elderly population and babies and kids and teenagers. And back in 2019, I started working at a big speech therapy clinic. And I loved it. I got to work with all the little kids. I worked there for a year and a half, maybe, before I found out I was pregnant with my first daughter. And that's when it got really hard, scheduling OB appointments and just needing to take time off was really, really, really difficult and really frustrating. So after I had Amelia, I decided not to go back and I started my own clinic because I knew I would have so much time if I did that, right? Everyone? that I'd have a more flexible schedule and I wouldn't feel guilty about taking time off. That hasn't really changed. I don't really take enough time off and I still feel guilty, but at least I am working for myself now and I can do the kind of therapy that I want to do.
Awesome. Cool. So, I'm going to pivot a little bit, but we're going to also kind of, I think, come back to some of these questions, but I want to talk a little bit about challenges, right? Because we talked about like inspiration. And I think we all know that oftentimes challenges come up when you are starting a new business. I want to kick this one to Emily. What type of challenges did you face when launching Cheerfully Made? If anything specifically comes into mind, and how did you overcome those challenges?
With launching, that's a long time to remember. There were a lot of challenges. But I think one of my biggest challenges was and still is that we are in a very rural town. We're very much a tourism destination. And so we are, am I lagging? I apologize. Is it okay?
A little bit. That's okay.
Okay. And so driving awareness both locally and afar has been one of my biggest challenges. I feel really confident in the product and the experience that I have to offer. It's just getting people to experience that. So I think a lot of it actually was solved over time and continues to be solved. You know, there's a lot of great stuff that comes with being a little bit more established. Things just get a little bit easier. But I would say awareness was always my number one thing. That, and we also take a really ethical and local approach to all of the products that we carry. And so sourcing products is always a challenge. It's one of my favorite challenges, and Sarah's as well. But I think just sort of sticking with who we want to be and being successful and sustainable at the same time is the challenge. So there are more, but I'll keep it short.
No, I'm glad. Thanks for sharing that, Sarah. Anything to add? I guess I'm a little curious, for context for everybody and for our listeners, you know, Cheerfully Made, largely, supports Canadian made goods, which is a very hot topic right now here, just in general with some of the macro climate. But Sarah, anything to kind of elaborate there on, I guess I'd be a little curious what that process looks like. Like, do you have people that come to you guys, you go to them, vice versa? Also, I'll add that we've you know, we obviously have some people on this call, other women on this call that you do carry their products like Blondie. So yeah, talk to me a little bit about that, if you don't mind, like in any particular challenges that maybe you recall kind of starting out.
Yeah, so there's many different ways. One of my favorite ways of sourcing products, as Emily mentioned, she hosts three craft markets a year. So we actually get to meet the makers in person and see their products. And we love being able to go to those with an open mind. And actually, at the end of the show, oftentimes we'll say, we'll take everything on your table and bring it into the store. But that's one way we do it. We definitely do it multiple ways. There are people that can come to us through our website, through Instagram. And then we have sources where there is a website called Fair, where it's, we compare it to Etsy, but for wholesale. So it's a site where it's a collection of makers where you can buy directly from them at wholesale prices. So that's a great way. One of the issues I would say with that format is that it is so oversaturated at this point, and you don't know. A company may list itself as Canadian, but their products are all imported. So it's oftentimes hard to narrow down and find, because one of our values with the store is that we want things that if it's not Canadian made, we at least want it to be ethically made. So it's just kind of weeding through and finding those special people. But yeah, that's.
Thank you. Yeah, Megan, I want to hand it to you and maybe in a timely manner as well, because Megan of Caribou Gifts also largely supports Canadian goods. And Megan, can you relate this, like some of these things Sarah mentioned about, I saw you shaking your head yes when she was talking about sometimes kind of advertises Canadian made, but then, you know, maybe just kind of importing them. Talk to us a little bit about, yeah, if you don't mind, I guess maybe challenges that you've faced, or even just anything that you might want to add to that.
Yeah, for sure. We have similar sourcing values, but I will say that we also have a full kids section, and kids is like very difficult to source like Canadian made products. And so that's where from the beginning, you know, our four core values, one of them is Canadian and one of them is gifts for all ages. And having small children myself, I wanted to have half the store as kids and half the store for adults. And so we really struggled with this Canadian kids stuff. And so we have a lot of, we have some kids items made in Canada, we have some from Canadian companies, and we have deviated to just sort of good quality stuff. So better brands, not junk, like you won't find dollar store kind of items at our store. But we have had to deviate from just Canadian stuff as we've grown as a business. And that's been sort of part of the evolving brand that we have. You know, my ideal situation 5 years ago was everything from Canadian made companies. And it's just, it's not possible to have the breadth of products that I wanted to have in the store and that our customers were really looking for.
Yeah, that makes sense. Very interesting. Michelle, I want to get your input on this as well. Just kind of staying with, you know, Canadian made products here. What type of challenges did you and maybe Brody face as you launched Blondie Apparel? Anything comes to mind?
Yeah, like a whole bunch. we started Blondie actually making everything ourselves, which was a huge undertaking whenever it started to actually like gain some traction. And and then trying to find manufacturers that would produce products like our products for like a reasonable price, but also like the minimums you needed to, yeah, it was easy and hard to grow because you needed to meet those minimums. So then you had to kind of figure out what you were going to do for business. Anyway, so the big challenge was trying to get ourselves out there to know that if we did order the minimum of what we needed, that we could still sustain ourselves, but also we'd have more time to do every other aspect of the business, which we didn't at that point when we were making everything ourselves. So it is still challenging to, because we make absolutely everything in Canada, even our fabric. And so there's times where, it would be much easier for us to just get imported fabric. It would be faster, a lot faster to do something like that. But when you stick to your values and what you've set out to do, it makes it kind of easy to make the, make the, I don't even know what I'm trying to say, but it makes it easy. Yeah. Make it happen. Make sure that you, you stick to your values, because that's what you got.
I love Matt, that. Go ahead, Emma. Yeah.
I was just going to say, and it's so cool to hear, kind of where you just went, like those three big kind of Canadian made businesses that we have here. And I've ordered products from all three of their businesses. And of course, I'm going to be biased because I love them, but they're the quality. And, Megan said it, especially when it comes to like the kids, the kids toys, like we all know we all bought, for kids, just about anything and everything. And I bought my daughters and my niece and nephew some things from Caribou for Christmas. And it is a different quality, and I wish I could put Blondie Apparel's quality of fabric into an ad more than I've, it's so high quality. And I love, hearing from each of them about that focus and kind of what Michelle was just saying, like it's worth it, even if it is ends up being more work, when that is such a core value to these businesses. Coming from a consumer from those businesses, that quality comes through their product. And again, I just respect business owners that stand by their values, even when it is harder, more expensive, et cetera, to do that. So wanted to add that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like, especially with, Amazon's rise in the last, 20 years or so, it feels very often like a lot of, particularly, businesses that are selling things online. It's tough to just kind of like not race to the bottom of everything, right? Like, how can I get like faster? How can I, get product faster? How can I, get to the cheapest price possible to get, maybe the biggest margins. It's interesting. It definitely seems, in my opinion, like there's kind of more of a turn in like the last few years for quality, over like the quantity. And I know as a consumer, not as a, e-commerce business owner, that I definitely, look for that more than I say I did, a few years ago. But Kristen, I want to ask you about challenges that you may have faced. And one thing I want to kind of call out is, what we've talked to, obviously, over the last, 5 or 10 minutes, Canadian like e-commerce clients that are, selling products. While you do sell products, you are also like largely service-based. So, perms and massages and things like that. And yeah, I'm just excited to hear from you. Like, what type of, if there are any challenges come out for you that might be kind of unique to like service-based industries?
Certainly when we started, when we launched, neither my mother nor myself, who are co-owners, were from the business. So fairly green going into something we knew virtually nothing about. Did our best to prepare, not really knowing, attended as many things as we could, tried to learn along the way. But some of those things that some of the others said, you just end up doing it all yourself in the beginning. That's a real struggle. You're the person taking the call. You're maybe also cleaning the washroom, doing the laundry, taking the photo for the brochure, or what have you. Those were a lot of our challenges, especially in the beginning. And of course, with time, you scale and you can introduce newer people, more qualified people to do those particular things. Those were our main challenges when we launched. And now, working with you, with both of you, we're really trying to step up our game with our e-com and also our or our web presence and so forth. And it is a different beast for a product than it is a service. And that's something I'm really struggling with. And because of the nature of the business that we run, we, you know, a lot of the products are saturated. A lot of the hair care brands that we carry, you can get anywhere. You can get it at Sephora. You can get it, you know, here, there, and everywhere. So you've got to find a way to set yourself apart. And so that's one of the reasons we're trying to really reboot our boutique section, or some of the unique things that we carry in our salon and spa that maybe people might not associate with a salon and spa. So we're trying to attack it that way. There's always something new you've got to tackle to stay, stay in with the times.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And, you know, Emma and I, talk often about, you know, the, I think it's wild, right? Cause you know, the internet's been around for a while, e-commerce, selling things on the internet has been around for a while, but, it's fascinating to us. It's just still, how many businesses aren't really, don't really have a website or a way to sell online, or, you know, for various reasons, you know, maybe some just kind of old dog, new tricks, maybe some are intimidated. And I think, you know, just, for myself here, and I think maybe I'm a little bit, that is, one thing that we really enjoy about what we do is that we, get to, you know, sometimes work with people that aren't, you know, have been online for a long time, but like we've worked with clients that have, you know, we're making, literally making them websites. And then we're, you know, helping them take pictures of their products or putting them in front of the right people. We're not taking any pictures. You know, so it, that's been, extremely rewarding, to do that. Awesome. So I'm going to pivot here a little bit. And I want to talk about just kind of, breaking barriers and, lessons learned. So I do want to kick this one to, Megan to start us off. Megan, what is one piece of advice, that you wish you had in the early days of, starting, Caribou Gifts?
Oh, I don't know. that's a really good question. I think leaning on others for things is probably helpful. I think most of us are probably pretty type A here. So, you know, this business started in my basement, and it started with me packing every single order and building the website and doing everything. And I still do an awful lot, but, you know, building the team and learning to trust other people is also helpful and necessary for scaling.
Yeah, Emily and Sarah, that sounds kind of familiar about doing all the order packing. I do want to kick this one to Emily as well. What's one piece of advice you wish you had in the early days of Cheerfully Made?
I think that was a really good one, Megan. I didn't learn that until like 5 years ago. I think that small steps over time add up is something that I've really learned, and I didn't really know at the beginning. I remember feeling like we celebrated 10 years in business 2 summers ago. Now we'll be 12 this summer. That was a huge accomplishment, and I didn't realize until we celebrated that I was really putting a lot of like weight on like that as a measure of success. Like I think in my mind when I started, it'd be like, a 10-year-old business, that's a success story. And then hitting that 10-year mark and being like, oh wait, I'm still doing a lot of stuff I hate, you know, and I'm not seeing the success that I want. It was a real catalyst for change for me. So I think that just like those two things combined, like the smallest, I think I was expecting like just like magic. It's kind of like when you turn 40, you're supposed to not give any more fucks. It's like that doesn't actually just magically happen. So I think I felt that way at 10 years, like, well, you'll have made it at 10 years. And it's just like, no, things don't just magically happen. And they also don't happen like overnight. So just taking small, like figuring out the goals and then, you know, writing them down, but not putting so much pressure on myself to like have that achieved by that date, because there's like, it's all just so arbitrary. And you're right. I think we all probably are A-type personalities. And so we just, you know, think we have this power, but really, I just think taking it a little bit slower and that time goes by. So what you do with it is what's important. And I feel that a lot just this week, even having these conversations, because we are at 1 year of using Fiddleleaf as a service. And although there've been many times when I felt like, oh, we're not seeing the progress fast enough. And it really took us probably 6 months to really gain the data, to gain the traction, to gain, you know. And so now that we've sort of crested that hill, although we do continue to invest, it's a little bit more of a guarantee these days. And I just think there were many times when I know that in the past where I have dropped out of something because I didn't get the results fast enough. And so I think in my maturity, I'm realizing that it's more of a long game than an instant.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. A lot of times when we are in kind of the initial phases of possibly bringing on a new client, a very common question is, how long before we can expect to see results? And we're extremely honest with that. Some agencies, make commitments that they can't keep, and we certainly don't want to do that. So, I really appreciate that context. Sarah, anything to add to that? You've been, of course, around for a long time. And so you, and the subject of Cheerfully Made, obviously. What sort of things, if anything, comes to mind of some advice that you wish that you kind of kept in mind in the early days? Or maybe if you were going to give advice to somebody who's listening to this, who's so close to starting their own business, what, would be something you'd say to kind of keep in mind? Or
yeah, it's again, Megan and Emily said everything that I would have said. The only other thing, if I could think of anything, is expect the unexpected. because there is with things going on economically and with COVID happening and with there's always something. So plan for the unexpected for sure.
Love it. Okay.
Matt, I was going to just piggyback on what Emily said, and the small moments, being able to focus on some of those smaller wins, kind of going into the big picture, because I think as business owners, and especially and it sounds like Emily, I know we've talked about this, you still, even being in business for so long, you still catch yourself passing by some of those smaller wins. But I think especially in your first year or first few years, it is so much easier to get overwhelmed by I'm not reaching this big expectation or goal that I set for myself that was it realistic, or am I, the reason I started my business is because I'm a person that likes to achieve things. So am I setting unrealistic expectations, but just not focusing on some of those smaller wins along the way, which I think would make all of us probably love what we do, that, celebrating those small things. And it's really easy because typically you take on a pretty big responsibility when you, sounds like a lot of us quit our jobs, probably a salary that was being provided to us to start your own business. So I think it's easier to put a lot of pressure on yourself rather than celebrating those small wins. So I wanted to just piggyback on that, because I think I think a lot of us have done that and are guilty of it, but those small things are what lead to the big things. And it could be understated.
Awesome. Cool. I'm going to pivot again a little bit to support systems and community. So I want to start with Casey on this one, which is, essentially, I think, particularly in the realm of, supporting women-owned businesses, I think oftentimes, there's desire to do so, but then sometimes I think people might wonder, how do I start? What can I do to support? Do you have any advice to essentially that? How can we people better support and uplift other women-owned businesses?
I run sort of a different business than everyone else, I feel like. But personally, part of my business is getting referrals, of course. And I have found that when I'm supporting the other women-owned businesses, like my friends that own an orthodontist office and a dentist office and all these other big women-owned businesses that are referral sources for me, it's kind of like a girls' world. It's become like a group chat of, it's not so serious. And it's become really fun for me to support them and for them to support me. So you just have to look for it. Just be be open to it, open to supporting other women and look for supporting other women. I think that's been the biggest change actually, is finding like my smaller women-owned health professionals that we can kind of have a little back and forth, like chat, talk about, you know, women stuff, girl stuff, and also like send clients to each other, which has been super fun and super uplifting.
Awesome. Michelle, anything to add to how can we better support and uplift other women-owned businesses? Anything top of mind for you on that one?
Yeah, I feel like Casey said a lot of it. Like, I mean, in owning the business for 10 years, you know that you're not going to be for everybody. So not taking like a whole lot of it to heart if someone is like, oh, that's not for me. When you know other women that are just as passionate for creating, like in our business, for creating clothes, you can send those people to them, because it's like, hey, they're doing a lot of good for the world too. And if we aren't your style, then go check them out. Or it's just you can network so much just by knowing that, like, yeah, you might not be for everybody, so you can share the wealth of of the brands and stuff. Yeah,
I love that. Emily, go ahead.
Well, it just got me thinking what Michelle said, just because we live in a really small community here. And one thing that we have really noticed is that it's like we've kind of cracked this code. If somebody comes into our shop, like we're in a real shopping district, a very tourist-based shopping district. If someone's coming to Elmont, chances are they're going up and down that whole street because they've come to it as a destination. And when we don't have something, Sarah and I will refer to, we take care to know what's in other people's stores. Like we have a real merchant community, which is primarily women, honestly. And, you know, we could not have something, and I send them across the street to Dot and Bliss, and that customer finds what they're looking for. It's my belief that that customer goes home and they remember my brand just as much as they remember the brand that where they found the, and sometimes I think they even feel that it's cheerfully made that solved their problem, you know? So I feel like, I really learned over time that doing that is just really helps everybody, including yourself. So, I don't know, just my two cents.
Yeah. Kristen, anything to add to that? I know, I honestly didn't think about this a lot until you kind of mentioned earlier, just kind of how close your location is to like Emily's and like Almont and all of that, but not super relevant, but she was talking about like sending people across the street. Anything to add on to that we haven't maybe touched on regarding supporting and uplifting other women-owned businesses that comes to mind?
Certainly I took, when I was kind of preparing as one does, I took this fairly literally with the question. And within the industry I am in, there's all sorts of wonderful events and trade shows, and as there is in any particular industry. And we've met a lot of great people. And anytime we were invited to attend something, whether it was a vendor kind of, showing us around, wanting to court us, if you will, to bring on something, a color line, a hair care line, a facial line. The actual most valuable piece of all of those networking events were not with the vendors or the people trying to sell us something or what have you. It was the other co-owners. It was the other managers talking about staffing problems, talking about inventory issues, talking about, the day-to-day that you struggle with. And that for me in networking was invaluable things I've been so fortunate to attend. I've had the opportunity to travel with the various color brands that we've carried. And the most valuable piece are the other owners that are, in the thick of it with you. And that's where we've learned the most, for sure, networking with them and maintaining those relationships over time. Now that we've been in the business a little longer, it's nice to see what other companies, how they've either evolved or changed entirely. And we still lean on each other through the changes in the industry.
I love that. I think when I first read this question, I was like, well, you know, duh, you just share their posts, like their posts, right? Comment something encouraging. But you guys, the things that you're mentioning, I think, are just so much more powerful than just, I think that stuff's important, of course. Emma often reminds me, hey, go, I just posted something, because I'm not on social as much as I probably should be. But Emma, yeah, go ahead, take it away on this one too.
Yeah, this is actually a conversation we were having with Emily and Sarah earlier that I think, like, each person that said something here kind of makes me think of is women sometimes compete with each other, or, you know, our defaults as women sometimes is to compete because there's just not as many women in a lot of leadership or, you know, management level positions. So I've done a lot of reading about this, and it's a thing that women common tendency is to not support each other. And again, I love hearing from all the women in this group that I think every single person that spoke on that said, you know, they're peers. Like, I'm sending someone, you know, Michelle said it, Emily said it, Kristen said it, I'm sending them to someone that I think can meet their needs, even if it's not us. And I think that's just a big thing I wanted to empower with this podcast, but with Fiddleleaf, is to not look at women as competition, but what can we do to, you know, there's so many quotes for International Women's Day that support this, but, like, you know, grab their hand and help them come up with you type thing. And again, I think just amazing that, you know, we all look at it like that and have, and Kristen, I think you said it too, just like there's something about, and even in this room altogether, of like just those similarities of what your experience is and those challenges that you go through, like, collectively. And I think as women, we have a lot of those. And it just feels, you feel less alone and feel, you know, like, hey, like, we're doing this together, and together we can make changes. And anyways, I think it's just, it's cool to see individual businesses kind of reflect women, uplifting women, you know, across North America.
Hillary, anything to add to that?
Can you repeat the beginning question? Because I'm lost in that.
No, you're okay. Well, we've also been on this one for a little while, but I want to make sure that I check in with you and on Megan on this. And also, we're doing, like, really well on time, so which is a good thing. The question was around, how can we better support and uplift other women-owned businesses?
I think that for me, I'm so in the beginning of it that imposter syndrome has really gotten the best of me, as I'm sure it does with everyone in the beginning and maybe forever. But for me, in order to get people to support me and, like, spread the word, I needed to put myself out there. And that was really, still is really uncomfortable. And I feel like every time I walk into some kind of networking event, like, everyone knows more than me, or everyone's like, you know, a more advanced business owner. And I just kind of had to, like, get rid of that and be willing to still put myself out there. And through that, I realized that, like, everyone feels the same way. Not everyone, but a lot of people are still, like, trying to just make it work, and they don't know every part of how to run a business and all of that. And so, with having that attitude and being able to kind of put myself out there more, I've been able to make more connections, and they've been, you know, those connections have helped to bring more awareness to my business.
Yeah, there's definitely a recurring theme here, which is, I think, connections and networking. So a lot of referring, you know, maybe to another business, or even just kind of, like Casey mentioned earlier, even just kind of surrounding yourself and putting yourself in a social circle of other, you know, women, own businesses. I love that. Megan, have we missed anything on this one that you want to add as far as supporting and uplifting other women-owned businesses?
I think a lot's been covered. I think the only thing I might add is, and I'm not good at it myself, but I think we all need to be better at sharing a bit of the behind the scenes and, like, realities of what's going on. Because I think it's interesting, actually, how many close friends and family and just people who are close to us, maybe in our personal lives, don't really realize how much work and what happens behind the scenes. I was at home about a week ago ordering product for the store, you know, hauled up in my desk in the corner, and a very close family member said to me, "What are you doing?" And they had no thought that went through their head that you would have to find products and order them and figure out how much to order and put them on the shelves. And they just sort of thought it was like working in the store, like with the customers to do the checkouts. And because I think it's not their fault, they just don't think about it. And so then when you show how much work you're doing in terms of all the stuff behind the scenes, it makes it more real and maybe showcases how meaningful their support is. It's not like I just am working again at the checkout, which is still a great job, but it's just, there is a ton of stuff that goes behind it.
Yeah, I love that. As somebody who does not have a women-owned business, I strongly agree with the behind the scenes thing. You know, like I think I'm the family member here, right, in this scenario. And like, obviously, Emma and I work closely together, but I think many people, friends and family, and even customers or clients are thirsty to know what it's like behind the scenes. So Emily, go ahead if you were going to add to that, and then I want to go to Kristen after that.
Well, I just want to say that, and I'm saying this sort of like to psych myself up for it as well with all of you guys, but I feel like that is our unique opportunity within marketing, because I don't know if it was one of you guys that said to me once, like, that basically the Gap wishes they could make videos as gritty as Sarah and I can make videos, you know, because that is what people are consuming.
Definitely,
and that really like clicked for me with the whole, because I really I preach a lot of done is better than perfect, but I really would love it to be perfect. So and I think, like, I remember during COVID we really did start showing a lot more behind the scenes because we weren't in the store, it was closed. We were still selling stuff online, but we had to, you know, sort of peel back the curtain a bit. And I think that lent itself to like a lot of success and really helped us grow the brand during that time. And the feedback I'm getting now that that's over, and, you know, to be honest, I have a little trauma from it. I haven't been doing as much behind the scenes, and people are like kind of asking for it. So it's, I don't know, it's a hard balance. I know it's not really what we're talking about, but it can be like, you know, it's a vulnerable place to be. But it's the stuff that the people want, and that works when it comes to supporting independent businesses. Also, that's the advantage that we have, is that we are the face of the business, and bigger businesses don't have a face to share.
Give the people what they want, Emily.
Give them what they want.
Yeah. Kristen, we kind of recently were having a conversation about like behind the scenes and, you know, on the subject of marketing. I'm curious what you've got to add.
It is a little harder. We have a large business. So like Emily said, we don't really have a face necessarily attached to it. But in that regard, I think we have a feeling and a style attached with our brand, obviously. But just back to supporting other owners and people starting out, or just sharing stories. I think it's really important. Of course, we love to share the wins, right? What went really well, what worked for us, but it's just as important to share the losses and when you tank as well, because for all the things that look wonderful, there's many things that didn't work out. Something you launched, a product, a service, a package that you thought was going to be great. And, it was a terrible, terrible waste of, actually, nothing is ever a full waste of time and money, because you learn from it. But I think one thing, now that we've been in business a while, we're not scared to share what didn't work also. And so when we're at some of these events, we're pretty open book about it now. I think in the beginning, when you start out, you don't want to tell anybody what didn't go wrong or what didn't work out. I'm much more comfortable with that now, in those settings about, you know, when it didn't work and how you overcame. And sometimes we've revisited things that didn't work the first time and they worked the second time. So you can't just throw the towel in if it didn't work one time. So anyways, just sharing those stories really, really helps people starting out, and for people that are looking to reinvent things as well.
Thanks a lot for that wisdom, Kristen. Emma, you are close to rounding the corner on 1 year. So, you know, definitely on the lower end of like the freshness here to being a business owner. What do you have to add and any thoughts on what Kristen just mentioned there?
Yeah, I'm just so happy the conversation went to this because it's so important. And I think I've probably asked every single one of you to put yourself in front of the camera and talk about your story. So I just wanted to say I think Emily said the vulnerability. And I think that's spot on. And I think vulnerability should be such a big part of a conversation for business owners and especially women. And it's fear, at least for me, and I think all of us. And, you know, Hillary said like imposter syndrome. And I know I've talked to business owners on this call that have been in business a lot longer than you, Hillary, that still have that. I absolutely do, even with being in digital marketing and especially as a business owner. But I think, you know, I think we can all say that the uncomfortable and vulnerable places that we go typically are where we grow and typically where we see amazing things and learn things. And it's like, it's that like all, you know, all the sayings of, you know, you learn and grow in the uncomfortable and like the scary and like, that's the zone, you know, I think that business owners have to be in to reach their goals and to grow. But it's scary. And I think that's okay. And I completely agree kind of Kristen with what you're just saying is like sharing those things only make us stronger all together because people want to see things that they can relate to. And kind of that lo-fi video production thing that, you know, I've recommended to a lot of you is the reason that's resonating so well right now is because I think digital marketing's been around for so long. We've seen these beautiful, highly produced ads and posts from these businesses that have these huge budgets, but that doesn't relate to me. Like I don't, you know, that's not me. I'm not this beautiful model with perfect skin. Like I want to see the people that are actually like going and doing these things or buying these products. And I want to hear from them. The mom that's busy and the toddler's pulling her, you know, arm. Like I want to hear from that mom. You know, I want to see something that I can relate to. And I think as brands representing your business, but also as business owners, like sharing the real is so important, but also really works with paid advertising too.
Awesome. Cool. Let's move on to work-life balance and growth. So this is gonna kind of be maybe like a bit of a two-part thing here. I think I'm gonna kind of blend two questions together. Essentially, I would love to know how do you balance running a business with personal life and self-care? Have you experienced burnout? And how do you manage stress? So I know that's a lot. I'm going to repeat it really quick. Essentially, the question is, you know, every single woman on this call has, you know, friends, family, possibly kids, right? So in other words, your life isn't just, you're not defined as the business that you own or run or cooperate. So I want to talk about work-life balance, essentially, and when you do experience burnout, how you manage that stress. So I think I'd like to start with Casey on this one, if I may. Casey, how do you've on the subject of kids, I know you've got a couple kids. How, in just the context of family life and other personal hobbies and things, like how do you manage all of that?
I don't. I don't know. I can say that I feel like I go through ups and downs of burnout for sure. But I definitely try to leave my work at the office. And I make sure that we do no work on the weekends. We're always just kind of like snowboarding or at the park or doing something with the kids. So I think a lot of that has to do with like me not doing work at home, which I tried to do a little bit for a while, but it just kind of gets in the way of your relaxing and your time with your kids. And Amelia doesn't like it. She always closes my laptop. So we've moved to just only work here at the office and taking my time at home just to be at home.
Hillary, how about you? You have a newborn, So talk to us a little bit about work-life balance for you and, you know, how you stay sane with everything.
I'm still trying to figure it out, which I might be doing forever. But like I said, I went from like such a structured schedule with teaching. There was like you know, your day's completely set, your minutes are set, when you can go to the bathroom is set, all of that, to like being able to decide for myself what my day looks like. And that is wild. But I will say that since I'm still in the beginning of everything, like I don't have an office, I don't have a place to leave my work, I'm at my dining table. So it's hard to kind of separate the two. But and a lot of people say, like, which I would love to like be done by 4 when I get the kids, but really in reality, like once the kids go to bed, that's when my work gets done. And for me, that works right now. Before, that would have exhausted me, but right now it's working. So, and I can still like separate my time with my kids and my family. It's not like I'm working the whole time they're here, but that's, I don't know. It works to do it at night right now, which soon hopefully will change, but.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I know, you know, Emma has talked a little bit about, there's a difference, I think, when you're working at home and you don't have like your own space, and, you know, versus when you are like in an office, so, you know, on the subject of trying to separate things, it's just a lot harder. Michelle, any pro tips on managing stress and burnout, and how do we separate these?
Oh gosh, like you all like both just said, I feel like we don't know the balance. but I find it always changes. It's like I don't have any pro tips. Sorry. but I do find it like it's like a continuous change. It's like 1 week, I don't know if it's like a woman thing, but probably like 1 week you're like full energy, and then the next week you're not. And so I've just kind of like lately been leaning into that, where 1 week I can get 100 things done within 5 minutes. And then the next week, it's like I can get 2 things done that are like mediocre at best. And then you're like really hard on yourself because you're like, why did it take me that long to do that? And like, I am just wasting my time trying to get something. Anyways, I guess my only pro tip would be like kind of track your energy, where you're like, if in the morning you've got all of these great ideas, and then by the afternoon you're like a slug, like try and roll with the energy, because like it doesn't do you any good to just like beat yourself up about not doing good at it, especially if you do have the times where you know that you excel at it. So yeah, I don't know, I guess my pro tip would be trying to like track your energy on what made you super happy while you were trying to do, or like while you were doing the really good content or the really good parts of your job that yep. that really built you up.
But and, and give yourself some grace. Megan, I'd love to hear from you on this one too.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to add one thing, is that something that I became like a mom, and when I was working in corporate life, and I've had a couple kids since starting this business as well. So I do have 3 children, and it's always a balance, as everyone said. But one thing that took me a really long time to be okay with was accepting the fact that I actually just really like working, and it makes me a better mom. So like, I think there is a lot of mom guilt about liking to work and like feel this pressure to like spend, you know, so much time with your kids. And I realized and like became okay with the fact that I am a better mom when my kids are in daycare, and I will be a better parent when I come home. So that's my one thing to add.
We had a really good call a couple of weeks ago. I got to share my cat with some of your kids. That was a highlight of my week, side note. But yeah. Emma, you raised your hand when Megan talked about, you know, just kind of being honest with the fact that, you know, you like to work. So, and maybe that's not what you want to add, but go ahead.
Oh, it's all the things. I just agree. I love that you brought up to Michelle, and I love what she talked about, like giving yourself that grace and starting to learn about when and how you function. And actually, why I raised my hand, but I also want to touch on what Megan said. But I started being selfish with my time, which is not anything really. I never really done that. I always was giving typically my time and energy to other people. But luckily, with my last role before I started Fiddleleaf, I'm really glad I had a lot of experience with burnout and not a great work-life balance. And I had all that before I had kids, and then kind of had come full cycle of like, I have to invest in myself before I can give energy to other people. And for me, that's like exercising or different things that help my mental health, because I can't help or support children, a husband, a business, anyone else if I'm not 100% invested in myself. And I think kind of what Michelle was saying, I've learned my energy, you know, is up and down, and my motivation and everything based off of my own mental health, which again is investing in that time for myself each week. And that has been huge for managing, you know, the demands of growing a business on top of two little kids and everything else. But like Megan said, and I absolutely love, and I've talked to probably a few of you about too, is like, yes, I am such a better mom. I'm such a better wife. I'm a better sister, better everything. When my kids are at daycare and I get to do what I love all day, I feel like I go into the evening so much more energized because I just did what I loved and helped these awesome women business owners all day. And then I somehow have energy to like be present with my kids. But when they're home for long breaks at a time, I'm like, this is why I work for a living and they go to daycare, because I get fulfillment from both, but a lot from what I do for a living. And just like Megan said, I love that. Like there has been, you know, there is sometimes a stigma or shame around women that are passionate about their careers. And yeah, Megan, I'm just so happy you said that, because I have felt ashamed at times to say that, but we need women, like kind of like we said, like for women to continue to make changes in the world and, you know, government and other places, we need women to feel confident and comfortable to love their careers and have their kids in daycare and feel good about it. So I'm just glad you said that, Megan.
Emily, please, I'm really excited to hear what you have to add.
Well, you're just so excited to hear what I have to say.
I am.
Well, I think that by the sounds of it, I might have the oldest kids here. So mine are 14 and newly 14 and newly 16. And I just, if this makes anyone feel better. So I have always been self-employed since I've had kids, and I had another store previous to this where I had both my kids and eventually sold it when my second was 5 months. But it was chaos. And I remember like for years and years and years thinking, I've ruined them. I've ruined these kids. Like they just think their mom is like a stressed out maniac all the time. And I asked them recently and neither of them have any memory of me being anything but present. and I wasn't always. So I feel like I think that the most important thing we can do is take care of ourselves, because it's our energy that they're tapping into. It's our, you know, it's our moods that they're emulating. And yeah, I mean, they're not perfect, but it has gotten so much easier. And I remember just really feeling, especially being the self-employed parent, everything kind of fell to me, you know, like I was flexible that I could, you know, be, well, I wasn't really, it meant closing my business if the kids were sick and whatever, but I sort of took all those things on as my responsibility. Like I didn't have a real job, and it took me a really, really long time, like probably until after they needed me like quite so much to discover that like I was putting all that pressure on myself. I could have asked for more help. And now I do, which is what helps me deal with my workload. Anyway.
Awesome.
Just to I add hope that lived up to the hype.
It did.
Yeah. And, I got to add to it quickly though. I raised my third daughter like for the entire first year of her life in my store. She bounced in a bouncer behind the counter, and she's the most well-adjusted of my children because I was the happiest during that mat leave because I wasn't trapped at home, and she was bouncing with me with the customers and they were all like loving it. So yeah.
Yeah. I think she's definitely in some of our ads that we might be running. Yeah. And I can at least vouch for, you know, my dad was a business owner for a lot of his career, Emma and I's dad, I should say. And so I recall some of my fondest memories are, you know, kind of running around in his computer repair store. So, you know, keep that in mind. I think, you know, when you're in the thick of it, it's probably stressful as it is, but I have a hunch that, you know, all of the kids would kind of look back on that as, you know, more fond memories. Sarah, I think like earlier there was this theme of like roller coaster a little bit as far as like, you know, kind of going back to like the burnout and sort of thing. I'm curious what you might have to add to kind of this conversation around how do you manage, I don't know, I want to say consistency, but like it's okay not to be consistent. And I think that's also a theme, but your thoughts on that?
I'm like everybody else. I've had to turn off my camera a couple of times because my kid just lost her tooth and came in to show me that and had show me in that second. So that's the one thing that, like, I'm not a business owner, but I'm so invested that it's nice. It's like what Emily said, is that you can be a bit more flexible, at the expense of the business, but, it's finding those times. It's honestly working 24/7. It's finding the time when you can, like if you have a parent teacher meeting, it's taking that hour there and doing it after bed, or it's you really have to just make the time and love what you do.
Yeah. Kristen, when we looked at this question, Emma and I kind of prior, specifically around like burnout and stress, I'm like, well, that's easy. Go get a massage at Mahogany Salon and Spa. So business plugging aside, how do you manage the work-life balance and burnout?
Well, you would think that I would just be the most relaxed, right? I've got access to all these wonderful services,
yeah.
But I need a pedicure. I just got my roots done yesterday. I don't know the last time I had any of those services. I am in the business of like self-care and take care of yourself. but I'm just like the rest of the lovely ladies here. Like the burnout is real. And I would like, even the thing that's difficult here is even when I am able to take advantage of something, I'm looking for something, I'm hearing something. Do I hear something? Do I smell something? Well, that's not quite right. Like it doesn't work well here, so to speak. And I don't have children. So that is a whole other ball of wax that you ladies have to take on. And one thing I've fallen into a bad habit is because I don't necessarily have to be somewhere at a certain time in the evening, I am here late all of the time. I fall into that, and then I pay for it in other ways as well. So I'm not great at it.
But you did just get back from a vacation, right? So you give yourself some credit.
Yes, I did. Yay. I did just get back from vacation, and it was wonderful.
Much deserved.
I have to leave the country, though. That's the
there we go. There's the secret.
I didn't even think about trying to, you know, use your own services of, you know, of course, and I'm sure we all nod in our heads like, oh yeah, if I was my own customer, I'd be like, you know, nitpicking all these things. You're like, you gotta really escape your own self-care area, because mm-hmm. it's not self-care. Probably not hard to look at it that way, which I hadn't thought about for you. So I appreciate sharing that.
All right. I've got one last question, and because we're really close on time, I'm going to limit it to two sentences, a little plot twist there. And I'm going to go in reverse order. So sorry, Kristen, we're going to go back to back here for you. The question I want to end on, you know, kind of a forward looking, subject, which the question is, what advice would you give to the next generation of women entrepreneurs? So maybe that's, you know, some of the kids that we're talking about, or the freshman class, if you will. So Kristen, what advice would you give to the next generation of women entrepreneurs? And if you can keep it to a sentence or two, that way I can let you guys out of here.
Don't worry about it being perfect. Just at least start.
I love that. I love that.
You'll figure it out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Casey?
Be as confident as a man.
All right, fair enough. Hillary.
I don't know how to put these in two sentences. Success doesn't always look like making money. And own your title. Don't just say
I'm starting whatever. You are a birth coach, so call it that.
My mom's big on that. I forget the exact word, but basically you don't say like, I want to be this, like you are this. It's a fascinating psychological thing. I really, really like that. Michelle, what advice would you give to the freshman class of next generation of women entrepreneurs?
I'd say like, find your people. Find your people who like lift you up and yeah, you can work with and we'll be positive with you. So yeah.
You are the average of your what, five friends or something like that. I love that. Okay. Megan.
I think I don't know the exact quote, but I think you know, if it's not a little bit scary, then it's probably not worth doing. So do the scary thing.
This is incredible. This is the best question so far. My favorite. Emily, what do you got?
Yeah, one sentence is hard for me too. I think that some of the best advice I got was when you're feeling like you're an imposter or like someone else is doing it already or they're doing it better. The fact is that like, you know, everybody has great ideas and like 5% of people actually take any action on them. So you're already winning by starting. And I'm kind of reiterating what some other people have said, but like, get going.
Just do it. I love it.
Just do it. Yeah.
No, it's great, but it's so true. It's,
I wrote that.
Yeah. And gosh, I'm not, Emma, we talked a lot about that early on about like just taking the plunge. Sarah, what advice for the next generation of women entrepreneurs?
I want to second everything that everybody said, but I'd say you really have to love what you do. You're going to eat it. You're going to sleep it. It's going to take over your life. So make sure you love what you're doing.
You can fake a lot of things, but you can't fake, loving something that you do. That's something when I was in some leadership roles, I talked about a lot. All right. Emma, please, send us off with your, wisdom so far on, what for the next, generation of women entrepreneurs?
I would say just bet on yourself every single time. It pays off every single time and no one is going to look out for you as much as you're going to look out for yourself. So continue to invest in yourself and your contributions and what you can bring to the table. So that is mine.
Awesome. Thank you all so, so very much. This was a lot of fun. I'm extremely grateful for all of the time that you have you know, given to the podcast. As a reminder to the listeners/viewers, go check out all of these businesses. They'll be in the notes below. And Emma, anything that you want to add or say before we finish up?
Yeah, without getting too emotional, I'll keep this brief, but thank you all so much for being a part of Fiddleleaf in the ways that you are, for partnering with us, with your businesses, trusting us with your businesses. I know, obviously, they're your babies and they mean so much to all of you. So we appreciate your partnerships. We appreciate you being a part of our 1-year anniversary celebration, celebrating Women's International Day. And I am just so grateful for each of you. Thank you all for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.